And a very good morning to you. It's another lovely morning here in Salford in Greater Manchester. It really is. Glorious morning. Been up early, as usual. Been out with the Jazz woman. How you doing there, Jazz? You just lie there and mind your business for the next half an hour. It is Tuesday, the 17th of September, 2019. And this, if you're new to it, is a bunch of nothing, really. It's a live stream that we do every Monday to Thursday at 9:30 a.m. just looking through the papers. It is crass, it is crap, it is cringeworthy, and it isn't the Richie Allen radio show. It's just a bit of fun, that's all it is. Thanks for tuning into it, those of you who have tuned into it. Quick roll call, then we'll move on swiftly to the front pages of the papers. Martin Ellen, how you doing, Martin? To Lawrence, to Sean Inchcliffe, to Gail, to Terry Hayes, to Andrew Bell, to Who Knows 33, to Kim Marie Herborg, who says, morning, Richie, I miss your singing. Do you, Kim? You don't really. Do you really? There's nothing comes to mind. There's nothing newsworthy to sing about. Maybe. We'll come back. Julie Walters, A.U. Kekovic, Paul Birch, how you doing, Paul? Can you serenade us this morning? That's twice in the same live chat. I'll give it a bit of thought. Hi to John Rorty. How you, John? To Paul, to John Jones, to Wendy Savage, PB Awake, Jennifer Garcia in Florida, Maxine Orr, A Up Everyone, Acker Firmage, lovely, Afraid of the Dark is in there, the mic is turned on today, I remember that. Hi to Yarlin Zay, morning Richie, you're baldy Egypt. You spell Egypt double E-J-I-T, by the way. Well, that's how we spell it. Well, it's our word, Egypt. Hi, Jake. And Joe Carew, how you doing, Joe Carew? Bruce Blunt, how you doing, Bruce? I have to unhide that, Bruce. Hi, the Russian bot. Loads of Russian bots around. Danzo. Let's see. I've had to unhide some messages there. Charlotte Bins, how you, Charlotte? Mark Perry has got sound. John and Sarah Stott. Glenn Samuel. And that's it for the messages so far. Yeah. Right, okay. Let's have a look at the front pages of the newspaper. I tell you what, before we do, obviously the big story is, you can see there Boris Johnson and EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker. He's Luxembourg-ish, by the way. I bet you didn't know that. I bet you thought that somebody who hailed from Luxembourg was a Luxembourgian. Luxembourg-ish is Jean-Claude Juncker. We'll come back to that because it's a story that makes the newspapers this morning. But just in case you don't know, today is Tuesday, the 17th of September, and the UK Supreme Court is hearing arguments today on whether or not Boris Johnson's proroguing of Parliament, suspending of Parliament, is illegal. So the arguments are going to be put forth, and this is going to take a couple of days. So either late Thursday, but more likely Friday, the Supreme Court will decide whether or not it was lawful what Johnson did. And they get underway at around about 10:30 UK time this morning. Just a little bit of info on the BBC webpage about that. Let me bring it to you. 11 justices, 11 of them, we'll have to decide. Here they are. There they are. Hey, that's them. The 11 justices. They'll be hearing these arguments over the next couple of days. It's a constitutional issue, don't you know? Because one of the powers that any Prime Minister of the day has is to go and ask the Queen to suspend Parliament. And Johnson and his pals argue that they were well within their remit to do so. Clive Coleman from the BBC says it's extraordinary. It's incredible. We have to stand back and remind ourselves what's happening here. We're looking through the glass as far as constitutional law is concerned. There it is. Two questions, really. Do judges have the power to interfere with the Prime Minister's recognised legal power to advise the Queen to close down Parliament? Number one. Right? Number two. Did he use that power unlawfully by misleading the Queen? And that's what they're going to hear. You've had Gina Miller there this morning, the anti-Brexit campaigner, and it's all getting very silly, really. But as I said, the fascinating thing about this is we're seeing the death of it. It's like a creature now that's lying on its back, having been wounded mortally, mortally wounded. And all that's left of Brexit is really the kicking legs, the twitching. That's all that's left. There will be no Brexit. Of course not. Can't have it. Can't have that. Gone into it in great detail for 3 years now, and even before that, as to why that is the case. All right. So the newspapers. Let me just go back briefly to the chat there. Mr. Sin, thanks so much for the super chat there. Really appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed for the support. Lovely jubbly. Let's see. Olan Pierce is there. How you doing, Olan Pierce? Dick Scratcher is in. And Jacqueline Woolley is in as well. How you doing, Jacqueline Woolley? Right, so the front pages of the UK's newspapers this morning. Then, The Telegraph goes with Luxembourg laughs in Johnson's face. All right, we'll get into this. Normally I'd go through the front pages. Let's get into that specifically. The story inside the newspaper is the guy pictured there is the Prime Minister of Luxembourg. His name is Xavier Bettel, or Bettel, B-E-T-T-E-L-L. Yeah, that's the one. And Johnson went to meet Jean-Claude Juncker yesterday, and he met him in Luxembourg. Okay? And present at this meeting was this guy, the Prime Minister of Luxembourg. And a number of the newspapers today, even the Johnson-supporting Telegraph, is saying that Johnson was basically roundly humiliated yesterday. He was. He was set up to be humiliated, to be derided, to be mocked, to be lampooned, not only by the European elite and the European elite media, but more importantly by his own press back home. So what happened then? Well, the story inside the paper is pretty stark. It sums it up. How Johnson took his begging bowl to the European Union and Luxembourg laughed in his face. Quite extraordinary, really. Johnson has been saying all along that he believes he can get some sort of deal with the European Union, something different to the withdrawal agreement that Theresa May negotiated with the European Union. And he said that he's got the time to do this. And he said that if I don't get a satisfactory deal, the country will leave the European Union on October 31st. He's been pretty adamant about this and pretty bullish, right? That's the word, bullish, about this eventuality. I'll get a deal, and if I don't, we'll leave it, no deal. So off he went to Europe to meet with EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker. And whatever Boris Johnson might be, however ridiculous a character and odious a human being he might be, and he is, he's not stupid. And you have to wonder about Johnson's real intention, Johnson's motivation, and how he really feels about the European Union. Because I don't believe for a minute that any committed Brexiteer, would have agreed to meet with Jean-Claude Juncker in Luxembourg. Luxembourg, as I said on the radio show last night, is a ridiculous country. It's a tax haven for some of the biggest corporations in the world. But outside of that, it's nothing. It's not got much more than 500,000 people living there. Greater Manchester is bigger than it. Okay, Jean-Claude Juncker himself hails from Luxembourg. But why would you go to Luxembourg? Again, a committed Brexiteer, somebody who was sick and tired of the European Union and who wanted to be rid of it, would have said to Jean-Claude Juncker, Luxembourg? No, I'll meet you in Brussels, pal. I'll meet you in Brussels. Or better still, I'll meet you in London. I'm not going to Luxembourg. And this is an extraordinary thing. So they went and they had a meeting. And over lunch. And then Johnson was expected to go and stand outside the venue, alongside, as you can see there, that way, the Prime Minister of Luxembourg. And it's quite obvious, and I have no time for Boris Johnson. I don't like the man. I have no interest in him. It's quite obvious that he was being set up to be ridiculed and to be laughed at. Because the podium and the lectern were set up only 10 yards away from a group of pro-European protesters, who had been allowed get close or even as close or closer to the lectern than the journalists who were there to cover it. This is true, I'm not making this up. And again, I have no time for Johnson. To ridicule Johnson, to boo him, to blow raspberries at him when he was speaking. And Johnson saw this coming. And Downing Street frantically contacted the organisers of this event and said, look, it's obvious that we're going to be speaking and the UK Prime Minister is going to be screamed at and abused and laughed at and won't be able to be heard, all the while standing alongside a grinning buffoon, Xavier Bettel, the Luxembourg Prime Minister. So let's have it inside. And they said to Johnson, no, you can't have it inside, it's got to be outside. So yes, the European Union was setting Johnson up to be laughed at, to be ridiculed, to be mocked. In the same way that Theresa May, not that she gave a damn, I don't think Johnson cares either, and her Brexit secretaries, and she went through several of them, Dominic Raab, of course, but most famously David Davis, was laughed at and mocked and treated like shit, basically, every time he went to Brussels or every time he went to Strasbourg to negotiate a deal with the European Union. And that's what happened. It was vaudeville yesterday. It really was. And again, if Johnson was committed to leaving the European Union properly, Johnson would address the UK population and explain in language that people can understand what's going on here. They have no intentions of renegotiating the withdrawal deal they agreed with Theresa May, because the withdrawal agreement is tantamount to worse than staying in the European Union. And I won't bore you with the details of that, but I've explained it many times on the programme. The deal that May did would have been, the UK wouldn't have been leaving the European Union. In name, maybe, but not properly. And Johnson, of course, voted for this. Don't ever forget that. So they're laughing at him, saying, well, we're not going to negotiate the Northern Ireland backstop. They're all saying that. This guy did a press conference on his own then, the Xavier Bettel, where he basically ridiculed and mocked Johnson in his absence. The European Union is laughing in the face of the UK. And so is everybody else in Europe, saying you didn't really think you were going to get out of this club. It's an organisation that would make the five mafia families in New York envious in terms of how it behaves and what it gets away with. And Johnson is no Brexiteer. Obviously not. This is a joke. And very interesting in The Telegraph. Sadly for you, you've got to subscribe to The Telegraph to read it. But it's all there, what went on yesterday. And with the Supreme Court stuff going on this week, with Parliament having voted to take leaving with no deal out of Johnson's hands, as we know, Brexit died a long time ago. It was never going to happen. That's the front page of The Telegraph. I hope I've explained that to you. Johnson was being set up yesterday to, basically they were setting him up, they were setting the country up to be lampooned by the European and the UK media, while Juncker and Verhofstadt and von der Leyen and all the rest of them laughed at the UK. Said, look at the state of this, look at the state of that country trying to leave. We didn't want them to leave. It's their mess. They can clean it up. We're not changing the backstop. They really should have a second referendum. They've all been saying this yesterday. You know, it's better if they cancel it altogether. All the while they're making a dog's dinner, or Johnson is making a dog's dinner out of it in terms of how he's approaching it. And it's ridiculous. That's The Telegraph today. Talked about this in depth last night on the show. It all ends in jeers. That's the Metro. It's the same story, of course. The Guardian: Johnson left humiliated as Brexit visit in chaos. This is all carefully orchestrated by the European Union, because they knew this is what would happen. Johnson, however much I despise Johnson, he couldn't have gone out there. He couldn't have gone out there and stood in front of 100 or so, rent a crowd, by the way, carefully placed pro-European protesters, to be made look even more foolish alongside this Luxembourg Prime Minister. It's crazy. The Mail picks this up inside the Daily Mail. They've managed to get some information on some of these protesters. An opera singer from Canada They were able to get within 10 yards of where Johnson was due to speak. Carefully stage managed for the ultimate effect, so that the media would do what the media is doing, even though it didn't happen. The media is saying Johnson humiliated Johnson. Even Johnson's own, when I say his own newspapers, the newspapers that would support him. The Express, no wonder Britain voted to quit the EU. Exactly, that's how it should be reported. That's how it should be reported. Because since the UK decided to leave the European Union, 17.4 million people voted to leave. The European Union has done everything to degrade, to humiliate, to obfuscate, treating the first Brexit Secretary, David Davis, and his team wretchedly, laughing, refusing to negotiate, taking advantage of Article 50, which of course was slipped in. It's a Lisbon Treaty clause that countries just can't leave the European Union. If you vote to leave the European Union, you then have to trigger Article 50, so you don't leave for 2 years. So all the way through the 2 year period, they laughed and laughed and mocked and cursed and embarrassed and humiliated and refused to negotiate, refused to do anything. All the while the UK media blamed David Davis. Davis blew the whistle and went on national radio and said that the European Union was able to get away with this, particularly from 2017 onwards, because Theresa May put a guy called Ollie Robbins in charge of the Brexit negotiations. Ollie Robbins, of course, is a darling of the European elite. He is a pro-European Union hawk, has been forever. This is how it works. And it's a great headline in the Express. No wonder Britain voted to quit the European Union. It's a fucking mafia. Right? It's, you know, can people not see it? And that's just the base. That's the basic. This is just basic stuff. It goes far deeper. That's the Express today. But people don't want to hear it. The Times, Tory anger is Johnson ambushed in Europe. Yes. Yes, but this is what they do. But how many people will be watching this who maybe voted Remain? And think, honestly, and think, yeah, they are a bunch of fucking gangsters in Brussels. Really? How many? I don't know. Identity politics, narcissism. I don't know. Financial Times. Story, obviously, on the price of oil spiking on account of the disruption to the Saudi supply. The Iranians are adamant that it wasn't them. This is RT. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said the drone attack on the Saudi oil infrastructure was probably Yemen's response, and a proportionate one to years of bombings that have killed God knows how many people in Yemen. So that's him responding there. I must mention Ryan Dawson, by the way. ANCReport.com. Ryan was on the radio show with me last night. Really interesting fella. Really enjoyed chatting with him. And it was a really good conversation. We got into many areas. He did mention last night, did Ryan, in the conversation, that the response wouldn't necessarily be attacks, air attacks inside Iran, or even drone attacks on Iran, that the Israeli, US, French cartel would go after Iran in Syria. And he is right. That was borne out by news that came in overnight of such an attack inside Syria. For more on that, you'll get it at ancreport.com. So we got that pretty right there, did Ryan Dawson. We didn't do the Mirror, did we? Gary Lineker, yeah. I've told the BBC to cut my pay, says Lineker. There's been a backlash over news that emerged some months ago that the exemption for over 75s, was it? That meant they didn't have to pay their licence fee, was being removed, and it would be means tested. And that would obviously mean, that was a serious decision, of course, with implications for older people who maybe are not living on much money, on a small pension. And there was a lot of talk at that time about the exorbitant salaries of BBC personalities like his. He's got the cushiest job in the BBC. He sits on television and introduces football matches and then hands over to ex-footballers to analyse the action they've just seen. It is the easiest job in the world. You know, I've worked at pretty much every level of the media. And I can tell you, as a presenter, who in the past has earned a very good salary, that it's unjustified. Sitting in a studio watching football and talking about it, how they justify paying them 1.5, 2 million, 3 million pounds a year is anybody's guess. They're not worth it. Of course they're not. The Mail, 13.5 billion smart meters fiasco. This is a story that makes quite a few of the newspapers today. The government has rolled back its time frame for when it wants not every house to have a smart meter, but the government wants every home to be offered a smart meter. And they wanted that to happen by 2020, but it's not happening, so they've pushed it back to 2024. The Mail headline saying that the devices are plagued by glitches, and guess what? The bill payer is paying the bill. And the article is an in-depth one inside the Mail. It will affect you if you're living in the UK, so I do recommend you read it. It's dailymail.co.uk, is it, or dailymail.com, one or the other. Smart meters, you shouldn't have one in your house. You shouldn't have one. This house, we arrived and there was a smart meter. And we've insisted that the company get rid of it. And we've changed supplier. We're still waiting for the company to come and get rid of it. And the future Mrs. Allen, who's got a beautiful French accent, and she's a beautiful woman, inside and out, and is very calm, and uses very moderate language, and is very lovely. I heard her screaming down the phone the other day at the former supplier for this house, telling them in no uncertain terms, and I mean this in an outrageously French accent, because the angrier she gets, the more pronounced the accent becomes. Telling them, if you don't come and take this fucking smart meter, I will stick it up your fucking arse. Something like that, anyway. I heard fucking and I heard arse coming from this petite little French woman. And she's serious too. So yes, don't have smart meters. Analog, the old meter with the little twirly disc and the numbers. That'll do you. Don't succumb to the smart meter. What's in the Sun? Hero Ben's brother and sister were shot dead. It's a human interest story about the England cricketer. The vice captain, Ben Stokes, is an amazing cricket player and an interesting character, to say the least. He's had a colourful couple of years, has Ben. And his backstory, he was born in New Zealand. His family came to the UK when he was very young. His backstory is interesting. That's in the Sun. Don't ever buy the Sun. And the Star, Strictly Gum Dancing, Anton Dubecki or Dubicki or whatever, says he might win the competition this year because his partner has her own teeth, having a pop at some of the older ladies whom he's been asked to dance with in the past. The ageist bastard, Anton Dubecki. Dubicki? Dubecki, who cares? I couldn't give a shite. Yeah. Hi to Ian Hilpus, how you doing, Ian? Yeah. Oh yeah, she's brutal once in a blue moon when she's not getting her own way. There you go. Hi to Patricia Actis. Get smart, says Patricia. Get smart and get rid of your smart meter. Remember, you don't have to have them. And if you ask your supplier to remove it, they are compelled legally to do that. They must get fucking rid of it and give you an analog one. And if they don't, rip it out of the wall eventually, throw it at them, report them to Ofgem, I think it is, and go to another supplier and you'll get an analog meter. My analog meter is going to be put in the next few days now. And a smart one is going to be thrown out. Here we are. Okay. Jesus, I mentioned Jesus, did I? Jennifer Garcia enjoyed listening to Ryan Dawson and subscribed to his channel. Good stuff, Jennifer. Got about 50,000 subscribers there. He's doing really well there, Ryan. He'd probably have more, of course, if all was fair in love and YouTube. But all is not fair in love and YouTube, as we know really well. Hi to Kimiko, who says refuse them. Absolutely refuse them. Refuse them. Refuse them. Hi to Tucha de Danon. Marvellous. Marvellous. Okay. Sean says, if you live in Bandon, Cork or Portlaoise, you are going to be the first for smart meter rollout in Ireland. Presumably, I did Venus Rising, I might have mentioned Venus Rising. Presumably, Ireland is taking the same approach to smart meters as the UK, is it? That they are not mandatory? You get one if you want. If you don't want, you don't. Is that how it works in Ireland? I don't know. And Dan Zoe says, can you do a Q&A live stream sometime? No. What questions would you have for me that are of any interest? What could you possibly ask me that would be of any interest to you? What do you need to know about me that I would want to be answering questions on? If you want me opinions on stuff, which are seldom always wrong and seldom always right, just listen to the monologues. But I don't know what you'd want to ask me in a Q&A. Right. The Mail. Couple reveal they are hiding the gender. We're hiding it. We're hiding it under the stairs. We're hiding it in the cupboard of their 17-month-old baby to protect them from unconscious bias. And they didn't even tell the child's grandparents for nearly a year. They're raising their baby gender neutral. Yes. Why not? This is the new way. This is the way to be. This is the new way to raise baby. So the parents' names are Hobbit Humphrey. Hobbit Humphrey. Hobbit, yeah. And Jake England Johns. And they're members of Extinction Rebellion. I bet you that surprises you. Hey, look at them. Look at them. Fuckers. So they are refusing to reveal the sex of their 17-month-old baby to their close family because they want to protect them from unconscious gender bias. This is the madness of this world. This is the lunacy that we are. Not only are we expected to encounter this on a daily basis, we are expected to acquiesce to it. We are expected to accept it and not to criticise it. Because to do so would be to engage or indulge in hate speech. Yes. Hobbit Humphrey. Hobbit. Extinction Rebellion. They're asking their friends and family to address the toddler using gender neutral pronouns, they and them. However, they and them are both plural pronouns. Plural. You can't be they. I can't be they. I cannot be them. I am me, I am I. I can't be us. Gotta love Yorkshire people. Yorkshire people make me laugh. Us. Watching Huddersfield. Football match recently. One of their players was speaking at the end of the game. Well, it's our own fault. We never took us chances. We never took us chances. Not we never took our chances. We never took us chances. I say what I like and I like what I bloody well say. We never took us chances. I pissed myself laughing. So male baby gender neutral. Yeah, it's good, it's good, it's good. What do you have to do to get your child taken off you? And do I endorse social services getting involved there? No, I don't. Of course not. I would be a hypocrite if I was to say that. They were on a programme called BBC One's Inside Out to explain their decision. They said the baby whose name was changed to Charlie in the programme, the baby will be allowed to decide at a later age on its gender and preferred pronoun. When though? Will we have, like, the Jewish have their bar mitzvahs, but you're a bit older when you have your bar mitzvah. Will we have a gender adoption ceremony in the future for children? Will that become the new thing? Where this will catch on and we'll have babies. The future Mrs. Allen will spit out a baby, hopefully, please God, sometime soon. And Carolyn will say, oh, she's lovely. And I will say, up, 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 up. Stop now. Don't fuck up the child's mind, Caroline, in the delivery room. Don't do it now. It's unfair. We don't know what it is. Well, it's got a vagina. We don't know what it is. But she's got a vagina. Stop it now. Give over. Could be a they, it could be a them, it could be an it. It could be burst gender. It could be polygender. Muppet gender, any gender, L gender, it could be anything. That's what you're going to have. So we'll have a ceremony when the child is 7 years old. And the child can keep everybody in suspicion and on tenterhooks until the ceremony. And then the child can say, well, I am what I am, or whatever the fuck. This is madness stuff, isn't it? It's madness. Madness. So the child will go to school, presumably, if the child is not homeschooled. And a list of instructions will be given to the school and to the teachers. You can't do this, you can't do that. You can't say this, you can't say that. You must say this, you must not say that. And this will become the norm. And laughing at it. And using satirical comedy or satirical routines, comedians and comediennes will be denounced as hate speech. And that is true. It will be denounced as hate speech. We even have a new NGO. And the NGO is brand new and it's called the Centre for Countering Digital Hate. There's an article in the Times today about it. You have to subscribe again to the Times if you want to read it. We now have an NGO called the Centre for Countering Digital Hate. And one of the things that will be designated as hate speech is laughing at this stuff. Can't laugh at that. That's somebody's identity. I've said this before. Huh? Mad. Loads of comments on this there. Loads of comments. Let me just get out of there for a minute and go back into it so I can see what's going on. Madness, huh? But it soon becomes the norm when it's not challenged. Even the Daily Mail now has begun to report these stories in a different way, in a more sensitive way than it used to. Okay, it's still got the occasional opinion piece, but generally now even the Mail is starting to report these stories in a more sensitive, a more tolerant, a more understanding way, a more tolerant way. Because we've all got to be tolerant. But I'm never going to be tolerant to that. Never. I don't have to tolerate a world in which somebody tells me I must refer to somebody as they or them because they are gender neutral. That is folly. That is extreme stupidity. So no, I'm not going to participate in that. Yeah. Boots is racist, apparently. Boots. A makeup artist went into Boots in Wembley, where I used to live, and was shocked to find that there were security tags on cheap black hair care products, but not on more expensive ones for white people. So Natasha Wright went into meltdown. No security tags on products for black hair care. Only tags on products for white people. What are you saying? That we're a bunch of thieving bastards. So she went into meltdown. Meltdown is the default position for everybody these days, isn't it? Just meltdown, you know. Boots has been accused of racism. Makeup artist Natasha Wright was upset to see the devices designed to prevent theft in a store on Wembley High Road. Yes! Ah, many's the time I staggered down Wembley High Road. Many's the time I was in company. I'll protect the innocent and the guilty by not mentioning who was with me. But I'm sure some of you have a fair idea who was with me on my late night Wembley piss-ups at Moon's. Wetherspoon's Moons in Wembley. Many's a time I staggered up that road. There she is. Absolutely disappointed in Boots, like. Seriously, you're really bugging out, Boots. Let's get back to the seriousness of the matter. As a person of colour, it's a wonderful thing when we can do a beauty shop all in one place. It makes you feel included. Now to all of you out there that don't know, the UK black hair industry is worth an estimated £88 million, with black women on average spending three times more than white women. on hair care. So to be made to feel like second-class citizens is an absolute travesty. I looked around in that hair care section hoping to find European hair care. Bugged, but no. I was even willing it to happen so that I would be wrong, but no. In an age of so-called equality, diversity, and inclusivity, shame on you, Boots, for putting security tags on black hair care products and not putting them on the white ones. Boots were asked, are you racist? Are you, Boots? Are you? And Boots said, well, to prevent theft, our colleagues add security tags to the products they believe are being stolen. In other words, we know what gets stolen most frequently because it happens to be our fucking shop, right? So it's basically the law of averages. It's basically common sense policing or common sense security policy. The stuff that gets robbed all the time is the stuff we put hair care product tags on. And this hair care product happens to get stolen quite a bit. Now, if that's true, Boots have said it's true. If that is true, facts don't matter. Not anymore. Even saying that, even if it's truthful, doesn't matter. That's racism. That's absolute racism. That's insensitive racism. It's offensive. No, these security tags are expensive, so we genuinely just put them on the stuff that tends to get robbed the most, says Boots. Racism! No, it's not, you fucking snowflake. Yeah. Be Jesus, huh? Huh? Oh, be God, huh? Let's see who else is in there. Simon the Bomb, how you doing, Simon? To Norfolk Iceni. Madness. Lovely. Pierre Robertson, how you doing, Pierre? Don't tolerate the intolerable. Claire Bear says, what's going to happen in France where every object is male or female? Yes, the language, of course, yes. Hi to Bottle Beach 5, who says, I guess they use they because they have two interchangeable genders. It's madness. Hi to Tarkin Farcar, who says, gender-free, cholesterol-free, sugar-free, alcohol-free. Everything is free these days except parking. Ain't that the truth? Hi to Ashley Watts. How you doing, Ashley? Hi to Bill Hanna. How you doing, Bill? To Jason Williamson, who says, I think they need Fawlty Towers back. Can you imagine Fawlty at the desk taking bookings? Yes. Very good. Charlie Silverman. How you doing, Charlie? And Anakin Skywalker is in. Very good. We get them all in. The mum is called Hobbit. Yes, that's right. The mum is called Hobbit. Joe Public says, a supermarket in his area has photographs of expensive meat products due to shoplifting. I've seen that before. Not here in Salford, by the way. But I've seen that before in places. It made me laugh. Because steaks and lamb chops and lamb cutlets and stuff would be robbed. So they wouldn't have them on the counter. They just had photographs. I've seen that, Joe. It makes me laugh, actually. Jesus Jones is saying the same. Well, he's not actually. Sainsbury's has got photographs of people who are banned from the shop for theft. How would she, as a black woman, react to that? Who knows? Very good. Very good. And it's 10 past 10. I've not got much else for you. Except this. McDonald's faces arch enemy in tiniest county. This is interesting. Let me bring this up. Oh, let me bring this up. Oh, yeah. McDonald's, eh? I'd be very disappointed to learn that any of my listeners, my radio listeners, would indulge in eating McDonald's. It's absolutely shit, isn't it? I've not had fast food from anything like McDonald's for since before we moved to Spain. So you're going back to 2005. Very early 2006. Even before that. Couldn't eat in that shithole. So the Neil Johnston is a Midlands correspondent for The Times, and he talks about, you know, McDonald's first branch, which was in San Bernardino in California. It's in China. World domination for McDonald's. You're never too far away from the brand, are you? But he says, bosses at the multi-billion pound burger chain hadn't reckoned on the residents of Rutland, which is in the East Midlands, Britain's smallest county. Because when McDonald's announced plans to open a McDonald's in Rutland, in East Midlands, they didn't expect the reaction they would get from residents living there. The picturesque area of the East Midlands hasn't hosted a McDonald's since the first British restaurant opened in London in 1974. The arches stand above 1,250 restaurants across Britain, but neither McDonald's, Burger King or KFC have attempted to open in Rutland, Britain's tiniest county, until now. But residents there are fighting back and are fighting back hard against it. And I have a lot of time for them. It is a pile of shit, is McDonald's. It is crap. I could be here all day talking about how bad it is. Nutritionally, not just that, but everything else that company gets up to outside of what goes on in its franchised restaurants by its franchisees. It is dreadful. Don't ever bring a child anywhere near that fucking place, no matter how much they scream for it. It is dreadful. Right, look, it was good to be chatting with you this morning about the old papers. I'm going to love you and leave you now and get off. And first of all, I'm going to go for a nice run. And then I'm going to prepare the radio show for later on. It's going to be an interesting radio show, believe you me. I've got two guests lined up for you. I'm going to tell you a bit more about them on social media a bit later on. But yeah, I'll wait and I'll tell you, because I want to do one or two things before I do that. So enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. The radio show is live at 5 o'clock, of course. Fab Radio 2, Manchester, of course. Tune in radio, my website, triggerwarning.tv, and lots of other places besides as well. Going to leave you with this madness, this buffoon. I'll speak to you on the radio at 5, okay? Until then, it's bye from me.